It is being basically stated many times by top Russian officials, ranging from Putin himself to Lavrov to Rybkov, that in the end, no NATO, completely demilitarized, the Nazis will be hunted down. Some of them will be, of course, imprisoned. Others will be killed. And after that, if you want to remain Ukraine, what have you, be my guest, no army. Before that, in Istanbul, there was the talk about, oh yeah, we will allow for you to keep 70,000 armed forces. I doubt it. It's going to be the case now.
I'll tell you who seems to have a different view than that, and you mentioned Sergei Lavrov. Well, his counterpart in the European Union, Kaya Kallas, has a different viewpoint.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We all support President Trump's efforts to end the war, but Putin will only negotiate seriously if he thinks he's losing. This week, we aim to adopt a major new sanctions package on Russia. Every euro we deny Russia is one that it can't use on war.
So here's the thing. So we have abysmally failed as the West writ large to do anything for Russia. And as she says, this is about to be the 19th package. The 18 packages that came before, if you're looking at it on balance, any rational thinking person would show that it harmed the West far more than whatever it harmed Russia, and it actually set the stage for Russia to move more permanently in directions opposite the West, that we now have less leverage. We're going to try one more time. And she says this claim that the only language Russia understands is pressure. And this time, Andre, this time it's going to work. What say you?
Oh, yeah. I have photos of her press, precisely this press conference. There were three people in the auditorium. Three. I'm not exaggerating or embellishing or whatever. Three. So evidently, even the Western media have no interest in listening to, you know, psychobabble, you know. So, but yeah, and listen, nothing wrong against, nothing, you know, personal against Estonians, but Estonians are the butt of the anecdotes in Russia, and it is all connected with the slow thinking. You know, no, I mean, literally, you will go to the Russian folklore. On the Estonians themselves love to laugh about themselves as slow learners and slow reaction time people, you know. And she is a living proof of that. She is basically, oh my God, she's literally from the anecdote, you know. They still probably think that USSR exists somewhere, you know. And yeah. So, but I don't know. It's just asylum, complete asylum. That's who they are. I mean, you have to understand, and I've been, larger scheme of things. We have this whole generation of morons with PhDs, so as H.L. Mencken beautifully noted, who came to power. They have PhDs in all kinds of crap, from sociology to literature and political science. And they ran Europe into the ground because they are morons. I can give you an example now that yesterday the former commander of the UK army, Sir Lord, what have you, oh my God, you know, Field Marshal, no less, Richards said that, yeah, Ukraine is lost, but if NATO would have come to help it, you cannot fix them, period. It's, I don't know, it's intellectual, it's maybe even genetic. They do not understand things. Some of them do, and they are panicking. But the rest of it, you look at Kaya Kallas, she's obviously a clown. She was she's used as the puppet, you know, and she articulates things that even those morons in European Union and European Commission actually were telling her to shut up, essentially, you know. It happened, I believe, like a couple of months ago when she started to bloviate on the issues of geopolitics, and they had to correct her openly, publicly. So even there in European Commission, they know that she's moron, basically, and she is. I mean, and when moron recognizes in you that you are moron, that means you are really moron squared, you know. So, and it just... I don't know how to even
Right. So the question is going to be then, to what impact, if any, will this have on the Russian side? And I want to ask your assessment on something right here. We had Gilbert Doctorow on recently, he said that one of the things that he claimed that gives him an insight into what the Russians think is by watching the Russian media, which apparently he does a lot. And a lot of people will just dismiss that and say, well, it's just media controlled by the Russian government, so you can't listen to it. But he claims, no, you can actually tell a lot if you know what you're listening to. And I wonder, to what extent then do you think that the Russian newspapers, which seem to be more in line with what you're saying here, said overnight about this whole situation with Trump and what he said?
Back with the Russian papers, which this morning devote plenty of column space to the Trump-Putin meeting in Budapest that could happen soon. Whether or not it does, the pro-Kremlin press is clearly delighted by the prospect of another high-profile US-Russia summit, this time in Europe, but without the EU at the table. A military commentator in Komsomolskaya Pravda writes, "We look forward to the summit in Budapest, but have no illusions. Personally, I see no grounds for a ceasefire, but seeing what's happening around Pokrovsk, Kostyantynivka and Kupiansk, I have cautious optimism that Russia's negotiating position will be strengthened."
That almost seems really tame from the Russian side. They have cautious optimism that Russia's negotiating position. How do you assess that?
Well, I assess journalism as such. It's not a craft. It's not a profession. People who have no background in anything, they go into journalism. They are, listen, and I want to stress, obviously, Hunter Thompson in his Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas gave outstanding definition of media, of press, but it's so profane that I'm not going to be articulating it here. People who want to see what press is, go to, obviously, Hunter Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and read about it. I use this quote all the time. Russian journalists, they're not much different from American journalists. Mm. You know, they're media whores, most of them. Some of them are not, obviously. And I'm not talking about the core of a real professional military correspondents, which die on the front lines. And, you know, some of them are cadre officers. That is a completely different story. But no, for the most part, those people are media whores. They need story. And so they bloviate. And keep in mind, I know number of media people there, including, for example, my good friend and acquaintance, Irina Alksnis, who is the chief editor of she runs RIA News and things like that. We did number of the shows with her. So you cannot make any conclusion from Russian TV talk shows or press, with the exception of very few, you know, are reliable sources. But we live in the time of a complete death of the legacy media, not only in United States, which already happened. They have discredited a bunch of the prostitutes. But in Russia, it's the same. So what they do, they need to bloviate, they need to elaborate, they need to, you know, perch this hot air while reality, political reality, which is happening, obviously, not in media sphere, it's happening on the political and military levels. They don't have access to that, except for the rumors and whatever Mr. Peskov gives them to talk about, or whatever Mr. Trump talks about. And most of the time, 90% of the time, they cannot even make proper conclusions. That is why they are also laughing stock, both TVs, shows, and when you look at their so-called experts, it's really, it's horrible, honestly. So in this respect, Russian legacy media are not much different from American ones.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, in the atmosphere of getting to actually what the truth is, and as we always talk about on this channel, everything, no matter what anyone says anywhere, it always gets back to what's true on the ground. And so, absolutely, since we've mentioned several times about how Zelensky says the front is stabilized, etc., let's take a look at a little bit of that. You mentioned something about the Kherson area. There was some news just out this morning that I was able to find here that says that the Russians have actually crossed the Dnipro River in a couple of spots down here, which could indicate some even bigger operations to the north. What do you know about that?
No, I mean, they went into this island. Then they crossed. Russian diversionary recon groups, DRGs, are operating for a long time now on the other side. The governor of the Kherson Oblast, I don't remember his name, from the top of my head, he stated a couple days ago that operation of the liberation of Kherson has started. Of course, there is a probing operation, which is totally normal. You know, they get the group in, see whatever we can do, go out, and but yeah, it's Kherson is kind of coming back. The Russians will liberate it. So it's all about. And yeah, I know it sounds horrible. It sounds absolutely horrible. But it is all about physical annihilation of the Ukrainian army and whatever the NATO volunteers, quote unquote, are there. So Russians are not in rush. It is all, it always was from the start of the special military operation when Putin told Gerasimov, we untether you. You are not tied to calendar. Because obviously Russian political top and obviously Gerasimov is part of it, but from the military side, they and the Minister of Defense, they know what is at stake and how it has to be prosecuted. And so in this case, no rush, just continue to do that. And the more it happens, it is all about NATO. It's not about Ukraine. It hasn't been since pretty much 2023. It is all about NATO. It is a complete demilitarization of the NATO debt, and then see what's going to happen. And here comes this other thing. And it suddenly it has this very unique boost. And I spoke about it in my video yesterday. Not yesterday, 2 days ago. About this funny idea of Alaska-Chukotka Russian-American tunnel under the Bering Strait. Suddenly, why Europeans reacted this so, you know, hysterically on that? Because they know in this case they will be completely cut off. Yeah, it is a major project, but they understand. That brings us back to fact which Russians understood clearly. And this is now the cultural reality of the overwhelming majority of Russians. Russians as a nation overwhelmingly understand that Europe and most Europeans are existential enemies of Russian people. Period. That's the thing. That's what happened. This is this tectonic shift, which, well, suddenly was tectonic, and then snapped as the earthquake in the last 3 years. Russians now know that UK is the enemy, existential enemy. Germans are existential enemy. Italians, enemies. You know, when you look attentively, and in this case, it's not just about political top, which before that, it was this distinction. Oh, yeah, you know, political top and media are one thing, but people of Germany or people of England, which, by the way, may be actually true, are not against Russia. No, they are. So, and that's the thing, which is like, if you look attentively at the history and the record between Europeans and Russia, Russia was invaded constantly. The only thing which Russians do is, you know what, they beat off invasion. They go back to, in 18th century, they took Berlin. In 19th century, they took Paris after Napoleon invasion. Then Hitler, Berlin again, you know. So, and this happens all the time. So Russians had it with Europeans, you know. And that's the issue which has to be strongly considered. And that is why this idea, for example, of the tunnel elicited this hysterical reaction on part of Europeans. They know what it means. That means that Russians are not interested. And yeah, what can you do? There is now the FSB warned about the MI6 and trying to sabotage the TurkStream. Hey, you know what? It's European affairs. Let them go, and if they have lines to the soup kitchens, it's their problem, you know. So Russians do not want to deal with this anymore.
All right. Well, let's continue on the front line here, because there's two other areas that I at least want to speak on here, and one is Pokrovsk. And that's the one we've been talking about for a long time, but we can see there has been significant advancements on a number of fronts here. Virtually the entirety of the West is now completely sealed off, and now Russia is going deeper into the heart of the city, and now even beyond that, to the extent that it may not be much longer. Possibly even within the next month or two, where the whole city could fall, which then it gets into this whole agglomeration with Minograd, in this pocket down here, if this here falls, I mean, almost the Ukrainian entire military in this area is going to be faced with either potentially getting cut off and then systematically destroyed, or they're going to have to withdraw. This could be a huge pocket and a success by the Russians before the end of the year. How do you assess it?
No, it's correct. Russians operate beyond the center of Pokrovsk. There are now documented videos which are seeing the surrender of the Ukrainian troops already in the center and beyond in Pokrovsk. So it's always was about cauldrons. It's a classic, you know, surrounding, enveloping, and leaving a couple of roads, or maybe one road for them to escape. It's their basically truism of the operational art that you do not want to seal the thing off completely. Because in that case, it may increase the intensity of the resistance. So you have to envelop it and leave a little bit of the opening when they begin to run. Mm-hmm. It happened so many times before, except for obviously Mariupol, when they were just pummeled into utter submission. So and it will happen this time again in Konstantinovka. That will be also the same thing. You know, Kupiansk, they are already pretty much basically compressed in Kupiansk, for example, into the southern part of the city, agglomeration, if you wish. And in overall, it's clear that whatever is happening here, it is all about Kramatorsk-Slavyansk agglomeration. And after that, pretty much that's it. You know, the remnants of the Donetsk Oblast will be liberated. And then on whatever is happening, yeah, it's, you can see yourself. And do not forget that it is actually probably the lag of about 3 to 4 days, you know, with the situation, because obviously we do not know the current real-time development. But the news which come from there, yeah, they are packed now into the southern part of the city and being annihilated as we speak. Obviously, some of them begin to surrender, others begin to run away. And that's what Russians want to do. They do not want to spend any unnecessary life of the Russian servicemen just because, you know, to accelerate things. Can Russians accelerate it? Yes, they can. Will they? No. Why spend your personnel and equipment for, you know, what relatively insignificant acceleration in terms of the liberation of those territories.
What do you make, by the way, of these? Because here there's been some additional areas here in the Kharkiv area, in this location here, as well as even it seems to be renewed move in Vovchansk in this area up at the top here. Why is there new movement by the Russian side in these areas?
It's all about what has been stated from the get-go, that in the end, Russia will have to have cordon sanitaire, that means the security zone, which will be deep enough not to allow the use of the most of the tactical weapons, such as MLRS, the type of the, you know, HIMARS, or, well, if you look at the TACAMS, which United States pretty much ran out of it. I mean, they cannot supply it. Well, not run out of it, but they don't have any more to give. And so, yeah, that's depending on the access, so to speak. It will be about the having security zone, which will prevent the, you know, reaching by that type of the weapons of the Russian territory. It doesn't mean that Russians will necessarily carve them out and join them, you know, as the Russian territory. It does not look like this now, at least. But who knows? As Vladimir Putin himself was ambiguous. You see, not only Trump can be ambiguous. Vladimir Putin can be also, when he was asked a couple of months ago about Sumy, will you take Sumy? He said, maybe, maybe not. That was his answer. So, yeah, Russians are not opening their cards. They're doing things we just can only look and extrapolate, you know, at what is happening on the battlefield. So will they take Sumy? I think they will. But again, Russians will not waste a single life of the Russian military personnel when things could be solved by merely applying appropriate pressure and solving them politically.
And let me ask you a final question here. Let's look at that's been a kind of an update on the ground. Final update in the air, which has a component actually of the defense industrial base because there have been numerous reports over the last month or so that by the end of this year, Russia will be up to somewhere around and possibly even beyond 1,000 Garand-2 drones created or built per day, average in there. And we've seen a few times where they've reached up to 700-800 drones and missiles that were fired. But oftentimes there's a couple of days there's none, a couple of days there's like 200, I think like the day before, 300, et cetera. Well, that would imply that Russia is somewhere building up a huge stockpile of them. So two questions we'll look. First of all is, what is the state of Russia's air war against Ukraine to try and knock out energy facilities, the transportation facilities? There's been a lot of strikes on trains lately. So let's start with that one first.
The latest data, which goes in terms of the production of the standoff weapons, such as not geranium. Geraniums, you are absolutely correct. Probably already within 1,000 a day. And, you know, just it's just normal routine work of Russian military industrial complex. But there is a very interesting thing about the standoff weapons, such as cruise missiles or such as ballistic missiles for much longer range, such as Tornado, for example, which are guided missiles. They are not just ballistic missiles. And when I talk about Iskanders, we talk about Zircons, we talk about Kinjals, we talk about all of it. And obviously a 3M14 caliber and X101, KH101, 26,000 evidently has been produced in the last 3.5 years. This is insane number. And some of them, of course, do not fly. They are being stored. They are being, you know, but 26,000. This is just, it's insane. And Russia is building up arsenals, but it was already stated by very many people, Medvedev and all others, that, even when it is when it's over in terms of special military operation, Russia will continue to increase arsenals just in case. You know, who knows? There are many people who are stupid still in Europe. Russians are not interested to, invading Europe. But if Europe ever, which I doubt it will, but if it somehow recovers and decides to, you know, do another Drang nach Osten, you know, as the Germans love to, you know, Wehrmacht did, they will be annihilated, even the assembly areas, without any trouble. You know, so that's what is happening. So the production is ramping up on some critical standoff weaponry, and it probably will continue to grow, but not all of them, of course, will be used on Ukraine. First, the Russians essentially are running out of targets by now. But it will be stored, it will be the part of the arsenal, and there is no secret about it, because actually the combined West, and especially Europe, which is fanatical in its Russophobia and hatred of Russians, they have to know that they have more than enough, Russia has more than enough weapons to...
So on this near term here, I mean, just talk to us over, like, say, the next 6 weeks into the first part of December. How much more of this aerial attacks from Russia can we expect to even further diminish their ability to heat, to the thermal electric plants, et cetera, the trains that have been moving, because that seems to be a relatively new priority target for the Russian side. What is going to be the impact as they get into the really cold part of winter?
Oh, it's already huge. They even openly state that essentially now Ukraine doesn't have consistent, it doesn't have permanent power supply. Simple as that. And it will increase. And don't forget, it's not just killing the power grid and the power electric power plant. Many people forget that Kinjals penetrated the storages of the gas in the Western Ukraine. And my God, they did. They essentially, Ukraine is being turned into the agrarian country, and on the level of self-sustainment, just not going, you know, hungry. It's not going to have the advanced industry, which is largely have been destroyed, and it's not going to have the power plant, which is enough to support that kind of industry, which of course translates in the end into some kind of the production of the weapons. Just to give you an example, Russians haven't touched mortar siege plant for years during SMR. And Motor Siege is the plant which it produces Ivchenko Progress engines, jet engines for such aircraft like IN-124 Ruslan and other types of their air and ground applications. Russians didn't touch it. Chinese wanted to buy it 5 years, 5 years ago. United States sabotaged it, which is understandable why. They didn't want, China has their hands on the fairly modern jet engine production. Well, guess what? Russians were not touching it for 3 years, and now they do. And now they don't care. They're just blowing this up to smithereens. That means what? Russians have no interest in Ukraine being a modern industrial state. And, well, it was disintegrating on its own completely, even before. But now it accelerated to the really radical annihilation of the Ukrainian industries. Simple as that.
So, final question. I always periodically toss it up to you. How much longer can the Ukrainian armed forces hold on before there's just an outright collapse somewhere on the front line? Can it go years?
No, not years. Months, you know. Yeah, they probably can do months, especially considering the fact how they are now continuing to kidnap people for support, essentially, their cannon fodder, you know. And, yeah, they might last months, but Russians are not in Russia. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Can Russia finish it off now? Yes. Will it increase casualties? Yes. So do Russians want to do it? No. Russia can continue to do it as long as necessary. You know, so, but yeah, and that's the whole thing. That's the truth which have been learned in a hard way by combined West. And now they see what real how real economy looks like. Not all kinds of those financial services, banking, and things which they consider to be tech industries like Amazon. Yeah, sure. You know, but this is the real economy, which produces goods and tangibles.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you coming on to give us an update on this stuff, especially on some of the tactical and the strategic views here. And just want to remind people that you don't have to wait until Andre comes on our show each week or every other week. You can go to Smoothie X12 and watch him online and or buy his books, because apparently those are some things that have a lot of interesting things as well and still relevant in many cases. So thank you for coming on, Andre. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And we appreciate you guys, too. Also, to let you know, we will have Trina Parsi on later this afternoon talking about Iran's enriched uranium. Has it been unharmed? New information today says that perhaps, what a shock, maybe things weren't obliterated earlier this summer like we were led to believe. We'll be talking about all that with Trina later this afternoon. Be sure and look for the time on our channel, and we will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.